Architect Witold Rybczynski wrote about the meaning of comfort in his book Home, A Short History of an Idea. He says he found that architectural ideals he had been taught in school frequently contradicted his clients' notions of comfort. Rybczynski experienced the same conflicts when he became his own client and built his own home in an orchard near Quebec. It was a 6-year experience that he describes in his new book, The Most Beautiful House in the World. Rybczynski hadn't set out to build a home. His initial design was for a boat shed. When he started building, he was reminded of how much he was bothered by a line in a now classic architecture text, which said, "A bicycle shed is a building, a cathedral is architecture."
Simple buildings are often very satisfying, and buildings like barns and country buildings built without architects have always interested me. And so I think as soon as I read it, I felt that at least for me, the line should be drawn somewhere else. And this is something I explore in the book.
Well, your building kept changing. You know, it started off as a boat shed. Then it became a boat shed in the shape of a barn. How did it end up in that particular shape?
Well, the place where I was building was extremely exposed. And one of the, I think, issues of any building is how does it fit into its surroundings? And in this particular case, one of the reasons that I adopted the barn form, which was useful for building a boat anyway, was the fact that I wanted to make a building that didn't stick out and look strange in the middle of the field. It was quite an exposed location. You could see the building as you approached it. And I realized that most of the buildings that you could see from where I was were, in fact, barns, and that they created what I call a kind of architectural language. And buildings have to talk to each other. If you have a building like the new hotel I've seen recently in San Francisco that is kind of shouting at everybody but not really discussing with them, the buildings start to kind of stick out and feel left out. And even in the country, and especially in the city, buildings are a kind of discussion group, and they say things to one another, and the architect has to be very careful that a new building somehow becomes part of the discussion and not left out of it.
How did the shed become a home?
Well, I think at one point I built the house myself, and I realized that I guess I only had a certain amount of carpentry in me, and I didn't need to build a boat. I'd sort of got it out of my system. And I was, on the other hand, I had this large kind of barn building, it was, at one point, I sort of was calculating on paper, and I realized that it was actually quite big enough for a house. There was enough volume in it for a house if I converted it, if I changed things around. So I thought, well, instead of kind of abandoning it, why don't I change this over certain amount of changes, I can make it into quite a nice house. And that's really what happened.
You and your wife had different points of view about the size of the bathroom. She wanted it larger than you initially wanted it.
Yes, I talk about that because when you're designing a house, there's a lot of standard things that an architect keeps in his mind. For instance, the size of doors, or the size how stairs are designed, or the size of a closet. And one of these standard solutions tends to be the bathroom. An architect knows that a bathroom needs a space about 5 feet by 7 feet, and he draws that in as a kind of box in the house, and then spends more time designing the non-standard spaces, like the living room, for instance. This is good in a way because it makes it easier to work, but it also means that you tend to accept standard solutions and you don't question them. And I think what my wife did was say, well, why does the bathroom have to be this small? Couldn't it be bigger? Couldn't it be laid out in a different way? What she was really saying was that shouldn't the bathroom be designed as a room, the way a living room is, rather than simply taken for granted in a sort of mechanical way.
So how did you design your bathroom, and what size did it end up?
My house is very tiny, I should say. So it started off as a minimal bathroom. It's certainly not a huge bathroom. I'm sure my wife would want it even bigger. I guess it's about 6 feet by 12 feet, something like that. But what I did was I remember seeing a bathroom once, I think it was designed by Le Corbusier, in which the whole bathroom was tiled like a huge shower stall. And instead of having a separate shower area, he just drained the floor, and you could take your shower in this room. So I did the same thing. I tiled the whole room, and one end of it has a sloping floor to a drain, and so you have a shower which is more like the sort of showers that I remember from school or gymnasiums, mm-hmm. where you really have space rather than being stuck in a little cubicle.
No shower curtain even?
No, of course. If your space is big enough, the water only splashes a certain distance. And so you just have the shower at one end and the rest of the room at the other, and it works quite well.
When the house was done, you thought that it didn't look quite like a house enough on the outside. So what did you do to make it look more like a home?
Well, that's an important point, because one of the beliefs of modern architecture was that if you solve the functional problems, you automatically got the right kind of building. If it worked, it was beautiful. As a form follows function, which Louis Sullivan said. This is something which I and many people believe is really an oversimplification, that if you design a house and solve all the functional problems, it may still not, for instance, look like a house. And it's very important that a house look like a house. It's not enough that it just be convenient. And one of the things, for instance, that defines a house is the front door. We have to see the front door. It has to welcome us. It has to look like a front door. And in my case, since the house had been originally a workshop, the front door wasn't even visible. And so I had to move things around and try to give a feeling that you weren't living in a barn, but this, in fact, was a house.
You know, to me, the idea of building a home is basically an impossibility. It's so out of the reach of most of us. I guess as an architect, it's different, because you can build it. It's probably not all that expensive if you're doing it yourself. I mean, I'm sure it's really expensive, but not like it would cost for a civilian who had to hire all the contractors.
Sure. No, in my case, we did all the work ourselves, and it did it over a long period of time. But I mention in the book that building your own home has become a luxury. It's paradoxical that, of course, people in what we call less developed countries by and large do build their own homes, however tiny they may be. And we, with all our wealth, have made this very basic and age-old activity into something of a luxury, which is, I think, a great shame, because it is one of the things which is a wonderful experience, and I think an important experience.
Could you imagine yourself ever moving out of the house that you built into a pre-built home?
That's a problem, because I can't. I've really gotten stuck there. It may at one point wear off, but it is difficult to imagine living anywhere else in any permanent way, because when you create this place around yourself, it's a place which didn't exist before. It exists in your imagination. You create it, and in some very real sense, it's like living inside yourself. So to leave that is to leave something of yourself. So it would require some really extraordinary circumstances, I think, to push me out of this safe place, this safe haven.
Well, enjoy your home, and I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.